You are an energetic being first and foremost, so the quality of your energy field is really important. It works like a filter, each part of the field enabling or preventing whatever is turning up in your life. This is the Future Self Energetics Show. I'm your host, Amanda Nelson, and I work in the body, mind and spirits community. I'm an award-winning master energist. That's a therapist that specializes in improving the quality of the energy fields that move in, through and around your body. If you want anything in your life to change, you have to begin with changing your energy field first. So my shows are a mixture of talk and therapy ideas, interviews and thought-provoking inspiration. They're all about energy, energy fields, protection and connection. If there's a topic you'd love me to cover in my show, please email me, amanda@futureselfenergetics.com. And if you love the show here on UK Health Radio, please spread the word about it in your networks. There's a particular type of joy that comes from rediscovering something you'd set aside years ago, something that once mattered deeply but somehow got tucked away as life moved you forward. Has that ever happened to you? You're clearing out a cupboard or sorting through old boxes or drawers, and suddenly there it is, that painting that you started and that you didn't finish, those recipes you meant to perfect but never got round to, the novel, the book that you read the first three chapters of and loved. And then other things demanded your attention. And in that moment of rediscovery, as you come across the painting or the recipe or the novel, you do feel something shift. And at first, you might feel a bit guilty about it. That's my default. How did I not have time to finish what I had started? I don't know whose voice that is in my head as I say that. It's not mine, though. And then the tone of voice shifts into a kind of recognition, a different quiet voice that says, OK, I didn't get to finish this, but I can do that now if I want to. In the opening weeks of 2026, I set myself an apparently rather ambitious experiment. 2026 is going to be a different kind of year, even how I approach the year itself is what I'm setting out to change. New Year's Eve, I grabbed a large annual calendar, the sort you put on a wall, and I divided my entire 2026 years into different spaces. But rather than writing anything to do or to remember or where I had to be and things like that, or goals and targets, I didn't do that at all. I just decided to get hold of some tapes of different colour, and I was going to tape out blocks of days. Blue days for anything to do with healing and fasting, orange days for service to my community and therapy sessions, and green days, they were play days, play in the energy days, just pure potentiality, let's see what happens days. Blue, orange and green, spaces allocated but with nothing yet filled in. There were containers, still are, that are waiting for whatever wanted to arrive. And on the green weeks, those sorts of containers are for all things like finishing paintings, perfecting recipes and curling up with one of my dogs and finishing the novel I wanted to finish. And what arrived almost immediately in the run-up to the green pure potentiality week was I came across something in one of the cupboards that I'd started to design, gosh, must be about 15 years ago now, and I'd just completely forgotten about. Back then, I had begun creating something like an oracle deck. It was a system, a divination system of sorts, and it was like no other that I'd ever seen, and intentionally so. And I remember I had channeled it, or it felt like I had channeled it in the beginning, and that it consisted of multiple decks, I suppose, each card deck exploring different consciousness states, different energies, different aspects of the extraordinary field of existence we all share and move through. And At the time, about 15 years ago, I'm not sure that I had enough lived experience, enough practical experience to be able to finish the job. And yet, as I was looking at it now, it was really, really clear. I felt I would be able to finish that Oracle deck now. That was it. I decided this Green Week was the week I was going to take another look at that Oracle deck, and I would reconnect with it fully, and I'd ask my guides and helpers to help me channel whatever I needed to do next and to get it finished, if, only if, I thought it was valuable enough to dedicate a week of green days to, right? And when I looked at it, when I went through it, I was really surprised and delighted by it. I thought it was still a great idea. I wasn't worried about what the cards would eventually look like, how many cards there would be, only what the individual cards needed to be and the messages that they were supposed to convey. I've had one heck of a week. What a phenomenal ride it's been. And but for the finishing touches, I would say all of the elements of the Oracle deck are now complete. This is the Future Self Energetic Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Amanda Nelson. And on the show this week, we're diving deep into one particular corner of the Oracle cards I've been working on. Yes, the Oracle cards. I would like to share something about the Elemental deck that I've been working on. We're exploring these extraordinary consciousness states that exist as gnomes, as sylphs, as salamanders, as mermaids, as shabda, as fairies, you know, in earth, air, fire, water, ether, wild magic that weaves its way all the way through it. And I was so excited about it. I really want to share it with you. I think more than that, though, even, we're looking at what happens when you stop pretending that something you had worked on in the past because you hadn't finished it didn't have value and wasn't worth completing. It actually was. And a lot of what these elementals were talking to me about was very much aligned with that. So I've spent this week, this entire week really, listing every single card I would want in that Oracle deck. Reconnecting too with the energies I somehow set aside all those years ago. It was like being greeted by old friends. Sometimes it genuinely felt that way. And today I found myself so completely absorbed in the elemental energies that I decided that what I would do is share what it was that came through from those cards with you today. I'm hoping that there might be a message in there. These are Oracle cards after all. But one thing I will say is that because I totally avoided looking at what anybody else thinks about these elementals, I only made a commitment to connect with these elementals as they wished to present themselves to me. It could be that my account, my connection with them, is something that's a little bit unusual. It might not be. I don't know. As I said, I haven't been out checking and looking in books or searching the internet or digging deep. I haven't done that. What I wanted was, I wanted to be in a position where, as the energy stepped forward, I could greet it as I would greet any other soul that I greet. I don't want to have any preconceived ideas or notions. I just want to spend time with them and get to know them and for them to talk candidly and openly and honestly about how they feel about working with me, how they feel about humans and how humans work with them. I was actually really surprised by what they said at times. Now, these elementals, they aren't sweet, gentle, sort of sanitized, sparkly energies that are coming through on these cards. All of the elementals that I was fortunate enough to connect with Well, they have real personalities, just the same way as all humans do. And they have gifts, and they have shadows, and they have light and dark sides, and they have wisdom, and they have relevant knowings, even warnings to share. And there's genuine wealth in learning about all of it from their perspective. I don't just want the comfortable bits, right? I want the challenging truths as well. I don't know if anybody else talks about elementals then in the way that I'm going to today on the show, but I honour the elementals that spoke to me today in not trying to gloss over the bits or put words in their mouths if they left me at all uncomfortable or some of the accounts about them might not be the same. I mentioned on a previous show that since about December the 15th, which was in a way part of this process, that I had been introducing myself as a specific identity frequency, the identity of prosperity. And every morning in that drowsy space between sleep and waking up, and again every evening as I drift towards the dream time, I simply state that I am prosperity. It's my way of setting an intentional identity for the energies that I wish to be synchronized with. So it's not an affirmation, it's not wishful thinking or anything like that. It's a declaration of identity, a vibrational frequency that unlocks whatever might have been waiting to birth through my manifestation field in 2026. And I chose the word prosperity because to me it encompasses everything: exceptional health, exceptional wealth, exceptional potential, exceptional happiness. Prosperity, it unlocks the key. And that's what I identify myself as at the moment on the energy grids. And I just wanted to see what happens when I did it. So I wasn't prepared for how quickly the universal unlock would respond. So within days of creating those green spaces on my calendar, and remember, these are potentiality days where I would accept anything that arrived. And I deliberately didn't fill those days in, you know, what I was doing on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I didn't do that. On my wall calendar, I just blocked them out green. Well, I found myself pulled back to this unfinished oracle work after I had stated that prosperity intention and after I'd made space on my wall calendar for the potentiality of anything that stepped forward for me. So this oracle deck system had been sitting in some energetic holding pattern in my manifestation field for 15 years. And it had been sitting there with all the guides and helpers, all of those that wish to be represented in this deck for 15 years. And they'd all been waiting for me to return to it. And I think the intentional identity of prosperity, including potentiality and also making that time available, was the key that unlocked this in my manifestation field. Okay then. So what I've discovered then in these opening weeks of my 2026 experiment is that I am someone who channels consciousness states and creates oracle systems. All right. I knew I could do this, but this is who I am because this is what I am doing. I am someone who speaks with gnomes and salamanders, who understands the intelligence of the soil and the transformative power of fire, who hears the organizing vibration of sound as it creates form, and much more. These are some of the things I learnt about myself this week. I think what struck me most powerfully today as I worked with these very kind, maybe not kind, these very learned, these very generously open elemental energies is that they're really not always sweet natured. They're not glittery beings filled with illuminating lights ready to serve us at the drop of a dandelion clock. The gnomes have really heavy hearts about how humans treat the earth. And they're generous providers who feed everyone, and yet they carry the weight of watching their masterpiece, this planet, being disrespected and damaged. Wow, I wasn't expecting that one, even though I have been working with Gnome Energy for a while. The salamanders, they thrive in fiery intensity that would destroy most others, but their very resilience means that they often end up feeling lonely. I get it. Who can keep up with someone who's comfortable in volcanic flames? And the fairies, they follow their own wild laws and don't particularly care if helping you causes harm elsewhere. They'll get you what you need, but needs must, and morality isn't always their concern. It's been so interesting to listen with such an open heart and an open mind to what they had to share with me and that I can now share with you. Each elemental consciousness has both luminous gifts and challenging shadows, just as we do. And they're not here in order to keep us comfortable, to serve us. They're here to show us a different perspective. And when you encounter one of these phenomenal elemental energies, whether through drawing a card on an oracle deck or simply recognizing them around you in your daily life, that aspect of them as teacher also steps forward. It's a glorious type of activation.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A CogniMovement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the CogniMovement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. I'm Amanda Nelson. We're exploring how my 2026 experiment has led me back to an oracle deck I started 15 years ago. And specifically, I wanted to talk to you this week about the elemental energies that have been revealing themselves to me. Let me take you through what each of those elemental consciousnesses actually told me about themselves, because understanding them isn't just about what's written on an oracle card. It's about recognizing these energies from their own perspective of themselves, not ours. So the gnome consciousness is the soil on the earth. I already work alongside gnome energy a lot in the garden. It's not the first time I've talked about gnomes on the show. So it was no surprise to me that they were the ones that stepped forward first. Now, gnomes, although they would be the first to admit that they might, to humans, feel like a little bit sort of old, slow, grumpy old guys, right? They teach patience, they teach natural rhythms, and they're incredibly generous. The one thing I'd say you need to know about the gnomes is that they are the genius genetic engineers of the plant kingdom. They assess and they share planetary resources, they plan it, they seed it, they grow it, they feed it, they home it. They command the natural cycles and have held their role since the beginning of time on this planet. The soil is their masterpiece and they are its intelligence. Gnomes know that masterpieces take the time that they take. And I have to agree with them. They have eternity to perfect their craft and they're not at all worried about handing down their knowings to generations of gnomes that follow them in order for whatever the project they're on to be able to take the time it needs to take. And the result of their work is the natural abundance around you. The generous gnomes share these offerings plentifully and generously. Everyone is provided for. Everyone can take precisely what they need. But if you've listened to my shows before, you'll also know that the gnomes have this kind of shadow side to them. The heavy heart in the gnome is about, I suppose, from their perspective, they feel that human race is pretty disrespectful of their work. They know it's not everyone, and I always say, it's not me. And they go, yeah, I know it's not you, right? We're not talking about you. But their overall message is clear. Humans, they say, you can't do everything. You can't have everything. You're not sovereign over everything. Think about what you're doing. The world is not designed around you and you alone. When the gnome is teaching the human, it always says, slow down, work with natural rhythms, think about what you're doing and how it affects not only you, but everyone. Take only what you need and remember, you are a co-creator. You're not the owner. There is enough for all when generosity guides your hand and your thought. So the first time I had a conversation with a gnome, now there's an opening line that will get you sectioned, the gnome was telling me off. What do you think you're doing? This voice said as I was working in the garden. Really took me aback. And I'm planting my garden, I replied, quite naturally, as you do when there's a voice talking to you in your head and you don't know whose it is. Even worse, said the voice in my head. And eventually, when we'd made peace, thank goodness, because nothing will grow in your garden unless you make peace with the gnomes, they told me that they were of the opinion that humans are generally disrespectful. I was properly chastised, unfairly, I thought too, but the gnome did generally have a point. Just because man makes laws that state the garden I work in is owned by me, it doesn't really hold any power over the rest of the natural world. Mankind doesn't own it all. And I was a bit taken aback because not only was I having this conversation with clearly what I learnt was gnome energy, but it was also that I was being told off for what I was doing when I thought I was doing the right thing. It's just that only humans think that their laws count. The rest of nature just raises its eyebrows, nods despairingly at one another and just carries on. So you tell, another way of saying this is, tell the blackbird, my nemesis blackbird, that he can't come into my garden and steal a juicy raspberry at dawn. Tell him he can't do that. He doesn't respect my ownership of my land or my back garden or the plants in it. And I can't tell the rain not to fall on my greenhouse. The rain will choose to fall wherever it wants. They don't care about any supposed ownership certificate that a human might have. You see what they mean? The gnomes are fascinating. If you ever have a chance to sit in the garden and invite a gnome to come forward, they will give you some remarkable insights into their perspective. If you want to take them a gift, by the way, they really like old-fashioned copper coins, like in the UK, the old copper pennies, the big ones. They love those. Just tuck it in the ground and they'll know that that's a peace offering. But do expect, first and foremost, for them to almost give you half a lecture on why who you are and what you are and what you do is not helpful whatsoever. And as long as you're prepared to be humble enough to allow them to do that, you then get on splendidly. Let's talk a bit about the sylphs then. I didn't know much about sylphs until I connected one, except I thought that the name sounded really cool. Sylph consciousness then, I would describe it as air-like. It occupies and travels spaces, so it's a bit like a breeze or a waft or a wish or a thought would be in how they present themselves. Not dense and solid like the soil-based gnomes are. What a great way, though, to describe themselves as a kind of breeze or waft or a wish or a thought. Sylphs are really good, though, in that they see patterns and connections that others might miss. And they speak really clearly. It was so easy to channel them. And the sound they made cut through all the noise. It just cut straight through the veils. I think intellectually they're very sharp-witted, I would say. But they don't stick around for long. It's not like the gnomes that plod and feel heavy and you can actually have quite a decent conversation with them. Sylphs seem to flit and flitter and constantly move. So one might come in to start a sentence, another might finish it, one might drop a piece of information, and then you find that you're actually continuing that same conversation with a different one. Really interesting energies. So the sylph said that you can tell when they're around you, in case you're interested, because you can feel a bit of scattering. It's like when they're around, they scatter your thoughts, or your thoughts can spin a bit and not quite land. So ideas don't quite ground and anchor into actions. They are disembodied types of energies, I would say. I think the density of a human body would be far too much like cement for them to spend any time in at all. But I feel to spend so much time scattered and sparky would probably be too much for me. I actually said that to them. I need to connect. I need to be able to spend time feeling and being and doing in presence with my body. And the sylph's light then, well, it can't commit. It can't stick to one thing because it's boring. It's not playful enough. It wants to be eternally free and transformative. It won't settle. So I suppose in many ways, all of that is wonderfully freeing, isn't it? But also the shadow side of that would be, well, focus your thoughts. Choose where you want to direct your attention. Finish your sentences. You know, unless you can bring all of that energy into one direction, well, you'll never get anything done. Well, of course, that's the assumption that a sylph might want to. But the gnomes, they would chime in this and they'd say, stop scattering your attention across everything and slow down or you'll never finish what you started. The next card, the next energy essence, the next consciousness, if you like, that stepped forward after I'd finished having a very flitful conversation with the sylphs was the salamander. What a great word, salamander. Salamander consciousness. To me, it's a fire dragon consciousness. And it did actually tell me it was. So a salamander isn't literally a small dragon in real life. It's a small lizard shape, animal, I would say, is what I see. But in mythology and folklore, the salamander of the legends that you would hear of, the stories that are told, well, the salamander became a fiery dragon due to its supposed ability to live inside fire. So although it is a fire dragon, I do have to say that to me, it's not as big as some of the dragons that I've been fortunate enough to spend time with. It's actually a very small dragon, but don't tell it. I told you so. To a salamander, intensity feels normal, even comfortable. It thrives where others can't survive or wouldn't be prepared to try. Salamander is resilience, it's adaptability, but it also speaks of being alone, out of choice. And when it was talking to me about being alone, out of choice, I wondered if it truly was. Sometimes it felt like there was an emotional quality that I was picking up on when it says, oh, of course, I choose to be by myself. And I thought, well, do you? Or is it that you choose to live in the fieriest places that you can find, and that not all other states of consciousness wish to join you there? So symbolically, fire is really useful. It's a great leveler, it's a great cleanser, it burns away whatever no longer serves whilst igniting what must then begin, and it clears boundaries to ashes. But it must stop to decide whether it really needs to always be running so darn hot. And if you thrive where others can't survive, you will be in your element, but you could end up alone most of the time. Being less hot means that you can be more included if that's important to you. Can salamander be as happy in cooler shadows, where company exists, is adapted to be by itself? Can it be as home there as it is at home in its flames? I think the salamander can thrive wherever it chooses to be. It simply has to make the choice, though. Such interesting conversations with the elementals today. I'm grateful to them for opening up and letting me know how they wish to be perceived in my oracle cards. One more then. The mermaid consciousness, and then I'll have a sip of water. She is of the water, is what I wanted to say when that energy came in. I know mermen exist, but usually it's the mermaids who we seem to connect with. Not sure why. Mermaids, they thrive in the flowing currents. They're very good judges of feelings. They've got marvellous intuition. Now, unlike the salamanders who seem to opt for somewhere really hot, mermaids, well, they're great. They can be in flowing currents. They can be above the surface of the water. They can be down in the depths. They can be in the quietest of the lagoons out of sight, or they can be in the splashy waterfalls. It's entirely up to them. They seem to be very adaptable. When I used to go scuba diving to do my underwater photography, I often felt, you know, like I was being observed by mermaids, like there was something that was peeping out from behind one of the small reefs and looking at me. I mean, turtles did that too, but I think it was mostly the mermaids. So mermaids can be really laid back, but don't let that deceive you. They move as quick as a flash, and they're so fast that all you see is a glint of them in the corner of your eye. And that's one of the ways you can tell that they're around. And they sit and they sing their alluring melodies. And I have to say this from the heart, I'm not sure I trust mermaids enough yet. I don't think I've met enough of them to be able to size them all up. The ones I was communicating with were lovely, right? I think if you were to draw close to them and they cared about you, I think a mermaid would tell you of the rocks to avoid that might hurt you or could block you being in your flow. And I think she would be able to prevent you from falling in too deep. and I think she would clasp hold of you to stop you from being moved along by the currents or pulled under the surface if the water wished to have its way. But she might not always reach for you straight away, though. This is something that I found interesting, and I wondered at first whether or not this was about their personality, or whether or not they felt that it wasn't their job or their task, let's say, to always come to the rescue. I know that the mermaid I was talking to said that saving humans is a kind of a national pastime for them, but sometimes they might just let you sink below the surface just far enough to make you feel the urge to rise and to be able to take that desperate breath. And I think the mermaid I spoke to said taking a breath, holding the inward breath and then pausing can keep you steady enough to let the current pass by. And I thought, well, that's really interesting. So I wonder whether sometimes the mermaids or the mermen, instead of intercepting straight away, they feel that perhaps there is a lesson to be learned by that person that's currently in the water, and they leave it just long enough so that that person can learn that lesson, at which point they then make sure that they're all right. How interesting. So as well as being lifeguards, they're also life teachers. And the mermaid says, listen to the messages that you haven't been hearing.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay then, I've had a sip of water. This is the Future Self Energetic Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Amanda Nelson, and we're exploring the elemental consciousnesses that I've been collaborating with this week. There are two more I want to share with you, if that's okay. The Shabda and the Fairy energies. Both of important energies anytime, but as I worked with them this week, it felt like these two held particularly interesting messages for the super energized time that we're living through at the moment. Shabda is the ether. Think of it as sound consciousness. It's a master sound pattern that all others entrain and synchronize to. And when the surface of a gong is struck, the sound particles scatter first and then they merge back together. They recoalesce. They come together again after having been separated. And as they come back together, they organize themselves into the shape that we would recognize as sacred geometry. And that might not have been the shape that they began with. So this is cymatics, sound creating pattern. Have you ever seen it when sand is poured on a tray and then a tray is put onto a music speaker and then music is played through the speaker? The sound creates shapes in the sand. You can find photographs of it online. If you type in cymatics, which is C-Y-M-A-T-I-C-S, and then look at sand, for example, then what you'll see is lots of circular patterns of the way sound created a shape of itself. It's so cool. This is Shabda, the organizing intelligence, the blueprint that tells sound particles as matter how to rearrange themselves. Sound speaks reality into being. Shabda is the creative force, the vibration that makes the formless become form, information carried through frequency. She's very special and not spoken about enough for an energy that is so almighty, and she is humility herself. Shabda wants you to know that your frequency can create order and it can also create chaos for you. It's a matter of choice. Sometimes, she says, silence organizes better than even sound does. I found that fascinating. Sometimes the pattern must shatter into a million particles before new form can then emerge. This is profound when you think about it. We spend so much time trying to speak things into being when we manifest, or trying to declare and affirm and manifest through words and sound and breath and all together. But Shabda herself was reminding us that sometimes the most powerful creative act is actually the sound of silence. Sometimes we need to let the old patterns completely shatter and fall away before we try to impose that new perfect frequency upon it. And so we must make way for the silent pause. Awesome. And then finally, there's fairy. I was a little concerned about talking about this, as fairies can take what you say about them very personally. And I can only relay, in my defence, what I was told. So if it's wrong, please don't target the messenger. Fairies. My experience of fairies is that they are not twee little folk that are all about magic and being in service to humans. Actually, they seem to be very, very powerful, almost wild, untamed spirits that live in the veils and the outer edges of things. Fairies. She's the energy of the forest that waits until nightfall and then reclaims the outskirts of the village. She's creative and she can be a bit destructive, admitting it's only ever what is required though. Now, what I find a little disconcerting about fairies, and I did talk to the fairy energy about this, it's also what I love about them too, I think, right? It's how honest they can be about their unruliness, that they don't lie about telling lies, and they really truly own their nature. And I love that about them. You know where you are with one of them. And I have it on very good authority that the fairy I was listening to, another reason to be sectioned, she was telling me that they are much less concerned with the notion of what we would call human morality or of other people's perspectives. So fairies focus on an outcome, the victorious end result. Fairies don't really care if helping you harms another person or helping the other person harms you. It's never personal, right? Fairies don't mind if they have to cheat a little bit in order to win, because the objective is to win. Now, ideally, It won't hurt. Hopefully it won't hurt. But needs must. So fairies are a kind of wild, untamed energy that speaks of power that is being unleashed. Don't underestimate our ability, she said. Don't accept that we fit the identity that's been given to us. We won't argue with you about it, though, she said, as being pigeonholed can be an advantage. We can surprise you with who we really are. I think fairies are boldly self-orientated. They follow their wild nature, and I love that. They live by their own rules, and I think that's wonderful too. I might not necessarily agree with some of the kind of fairy laws that they live with, but from my point of view, I'd much rather the fairies felt that they could be themselves with me and be fully accepted. I have to say, I have immense respect for all the elementals that I spent time with this week, none more so than the fairies. I can't tell you how much I laughed with joy when the fairies were being so honest about who they are and how they wish to be, and really that they don't care. So there you have it, six elemental consciousnesses, each one a card now in my emerging oracle deck. And this is what my 2026 experiment is teaching me. Systems and experiments are much more fun than goals and targets ever were. Containers for potentiality rather than rigid plans always feels more nourishing. These wonderful elemental energies arrived in those green spaces on my wall calendar because I was bold and brave enough to embrace my 2026 experiment. And I have to say, I'm loving it. And one last thing before I go. If you feel that any of these elementals had a message that was spoken precisely for you, then I am delighted. Because this is what it's about. I'm so glad you stayed to the end of the show this week. I'm really glad that you are here. That's it for another show this week. I'm thrilled that you dropped by. I present Future Self Energetic Show every week for UK Health Radio, and I'd be delighted to spend more time with you next week, so do tune in. The world of energy is amazing, and it's magical, and it's mysterious, and there's always so much for us to explore about it. You have a vital connection to a web of energy fields around you. Use that connection for your benefit. I've been working with vibrational energetics all my life, and I know that when you improve your energy field, you can up-level any part of your life.